And this is the seventh lecture of the 17th ACC, March the 5th, 1957. And today we're going to talk some more about techniques. Now, the first and foremost technique that anybody knew anything about in this physical universe was a thing called communication. And communication was the solvent of all evils. You yourself found yourself confronted by a tremendous amount of mass and space, which you probably mocked up. And however, you were such total cause on it that you decided you needed some backflow or something of the sort. You were very happy to find somebody to talk to about it. And this cured a thing called loneliness, only-oneness, upsetness, lack of gameness. And communication was a great cure, and communication remains a great cure. If you were very, very sharp, and you knew your Scientology from beginning to end, you could make communication a total technique, if you were that sharp. Yet if you knew things from beginning to end, and you knew exactly what to talk about, to the preclear, and exactly what to as is in order to increase his havingness. And if you were sly enough, mean enough, wicked enough, and bad enough, which I think is all the things you have to be to exert control, you would undoubtedly be able to use communication as a total technique. You don't just have to know everything, however. You just have to know everything across the boards from one end to the other. You'd have to be a genius on exactly reaching and touching upon those exact buttons in the preclear's case, which could be as is without a reduction of his havingness. Do you understand? And so in that way, communication could seem to be a total technique. Now, communication was a total technique once. It was a total technique once. Two-way communication. Now, everybody has the idea that it as-is things, that it knocks things out, and by various associations they have come to believe that mass can be disintegrated by communication. Actually, space can come into existence by communication, so communication really doesn't as-is space, but it does as-is mass. First sound a person ever heard, probably, was a sound he mocked up on the idea that there was sound, but after a while, he got certain conditions by which sound could occur, and we have those occurring today in elementary physics. They don't occur in advanced physics, that's left as a realm of the believable entirely. But in elementary physics, there are certain mechanics connected to sound. And it is the mechanics of sound, rather than the mechanics of communication, which give people the idea of disintegration of mass more than anything else. But we have the idea, rather current, that things disappear under communication. That is rather apparent, that this idea is consistent from person to person. Salesmen use it in reverse, which is one of the things wrong with sales. They use communication in order to acquire mass, but in view of the fact that they are really giving away mass in order to acquire mass, as tends to balance it out, but it doesn't keep salesmen from going out the bottom. And that may seem a little foggy to you right offhand, but the amount of communication in which a salesman is enforcing, the amount of enforced ARC, the amount of pitch on the ARC, his idea of acquiring himself some mass and a new home by selling you something you don't need and that sort of thing, keeps him consistently upset on the subject of communication. And he is upset on the subject of communication. You have to handle a salesman with great care. He is grooved in a certain direction, and he has found that certain responses take mass away from you, namely money. And certain responses let you accept mass. And he has these very well groomed, and he's been taught these, and Dale Carnegie-ism, is very much in our ranks. But he gets pretty aberrated on the subject of communication. When you're having communication with a salesman, you have to handle it as a very good auditor. And if you just start straight out considering the salesman in session, not selling you something, you have some remarkable luck, because you do have a fellow who is down below communication as a therapy. All communication does for this fellow is to knock him flat, you understand? The more he communicates, the flatter he knocks. He's very confused on it. Got the idea? So, communication, then, from probably the top-notch bracket of aberration right on down the line, has seems to be a cure. There's somewhat of a curse, because two new things have been added. One of those is control, and one of them's having. The necessity to have. You mock up the idea of the necessity to have. Well, this is not compatible with communication. Well, let's suppose we use communication as a cure long enough, and this fellow was tired of this universe, and he communicated with somebody else about it enough so that it disappeared, and then he decided that it was a better universe than the one he has now. Then he would regret the universe which he has just lost. He'd get this involvement. And how did he lose it? He lost it by communication, of course. So he says then that he has to have some more. And the communication is the fourth havingness. And we find havingness then running as the cure for communication. But oddly enough, havingness is a cure from there on down. We go all the way south then. We're dealing with very, very potent factors. But now there is a whole group of pre-clears below the level of the ability to run trail. You find lots of them. They can't run trail. Things are insufficiently real to them to let trail bite. This is quite peculiar, because they'll sit there and give you responses. But the degree that it's working is so slight as to say the trio is not working on them. Do you understand that? So there's something else wrong with these people. Something else wrong with these people from having this on down. And that something else is obsessive change. And they have so much obsessive change from the ability to have on down, that they cannot use anything. They not is everything. They cannot as is anything. They not is everything. Why? They obsessively change it. Alter, 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 alter. I point out to you something that's quite interesting. That change is part of control. Control, anatomy of. So when a person leaves the ability to have, he goes into the realm of control. And we find that control works from there on down. Now apparently havingness does work from there on down. Apparently communication does work from there on down. But not so as to effect change all the way. You see, although a person can't run on it, his havingness is what is monitoring his health. Even though he can't run on it, even though he can't see it, take something away from him and he'll get sick. You understand that? It's still a health monitoring factor. Although he's sitting around grumpily saying, at no time would I permit canal to speak with me. One day, why, somebody will admit some canal omits speaking with him, and he feels bad. He sees definitely the communication has been withheld from him. The butler comes in or something of the sort and won't give him the message that's been left at the door. Man, does he get upset. Now, communication is not curative, but it absence produces a considerable reaction. You got that? Fellow saying he doesn't want communication, but in its absence he gets very upset because it's still working as an internal curative factor, still keeping him going, even though he says he hasn't got it, can't have it, doesn't want it, but it's bad, but it's destructive, you understand? They can tell you all these things, but this does not make them true as far as this case is concerned. All right, same way with havingness. He tells you havingness is bad, the universe is bad, you don't want anything to do with it, things as they are no good, nobody is any good, he isn't any good, you get the idea. He's going round and round, and therefore he should get rid of everything, and everybody should get rid of everything, and there shouldn't be any more, and that's that. And even though he's saying all those things, havingness is still terribly effective on him, and his health is running in accordance with his havingness. So one fine day, this fellow is very ill, and one fine day somebody comes along and gives him a check for $10,000 so he can buy a farm or something like this. I suppose you could buy a gate to a farm for $10,000. But he acquires some havingness, and he becomes well. Oh, what a great mystery. Is here. This fellow can't have anything, he doesn't want anything, he couldn't run trio on a bet, and yet somebody gives him the farm and he becomes well. In other words, happiness was still curative, but he couldn't run it. All right. Now this is quite amazing. This is quite amazing. This is an amazing phenomena you're looking at here, because the fellow is pretending that he doesn't want the medicine. Therefore, he obviously is trying to succumb, we say. Whereas by succumb, we simply mean he's trying to make succumb his body or something like that. But we still find that the old curative remedies of communication having this work. Now, medicine. Today, in the administration of drugs, is just a 1-1 method of having this. It's just a 1.1 method of having this, and that's all there is to it. Look it up on the tone scale, and you've got the medical profession. They cannot directly give anybody having this, but they can let them have a few molecules in some overt capsule in a covert way, and they give them some having this. In other words, they can slip it to them. And it is so amusing to watch them shift the formulas around and have added million. And Park and Davis and other such chaps, I suppose those were all men at one time or another, but long gone to dust now. Those chaps monkey up some derivation of something, you see, and they put it in a capsule, and it's supposed to go in a certain direction and do a certain thing, and everybody gets beautifully persuaded on this, and it works for a long time. Sometimes these remedies will go for 2, 3, 5 years. Remedies wear out to a degree that they wear out the postulates, you see. They run into the resistance of can't have. Now, the cycle of medicine is quite interesting. Any new medicine brought out is wonderful today and becomes outmoded and useless tomorrow. First, it cures everything, and then the next thing you know, they find a few things it doesn't cure. And then they find a few cases that it doesn't help at all. And some they find some cases where it actively hurts. And a big campaign comes out against this particular medicine. It ceases to be functional to a marked degree. But here you merely have a significance of havingness, and that is about all there is to any of these medicines. Now, it is true that certain biochemical reactions will take place because certain ingredients exist. Don't ever overlook this fact. You have various magical reactions. You take sodium, for instance, drop it in water, and you get boom, which is quite remarkable. The two havingnesses, water and sodium, are to each other indigestible and create an explosion. Well, obviously, water is a can't-have of sodium. Sodium is a can't-have of water. And so, in all biochemical reactions, we get this Gaines condition continuing of one kind or another, or to some degree or another. And looking at a Gaines condition, you actually explain all havingness and all varieties of havingness. Some things consider other things teammates, and some things consider other things enemies. And you do have only one drugs, which are the really only one, now being used medicinally, by the way, radiation elements, being used medicinally all over the place. It's quite amusing because this has been going on for some time, and they're now waking up to the fact that they kill faster than they cure. Well, you have an only one element in plutonium. I think that one molecule of plutonium is at least critical of any other molecule of plutonium. And when they get sufficiently gathered together, they then decide to be apart with such violence that they set other things off too. The contagion of aberration runs rather rapidly into other elements. You get the idea. Now, can you get the idea of explaining elements and having this by the Gibbs condition and by teammates and allies and that sort of thing? It's quite interesting to look at this because all of these things were marked up and given the significance by patents. And they are postulates and suspensions, quite interesting. Someday when you're running this, you'll all of a sudden see this, that the floor is made out of a series of postulates which are not his or alters in certain ways, and that if you unalters these and un-not-is them with sufficient violence or accuracy, that you'll get something else or nothing at all. At the moment that you can take them apart, you can probably put them back together again. So it's don't worry about the floor vanishing simply because you know what the floor consists of. If you're that good, it also takes an intention. Everything is not still operating on automatic. You get so good that you can do this, you have to intend to do it. But if Thetan's insistent that no other Thetan must come along and take apart the mass which he just mocked up, has caused an enormous number of postulates, of conditions, of considerations, all of which add up to the fact that you mustn't touch nest. Don't look at it the way it is. You see, don't look at it the way it is, and therefore it will be. Because it's sufficiently, continually, all it is, that it then persists. And you get persistence out of this alteration. We alter what it really is in our own minds, and then we never look at it as it is, and so it stays there. And so we get all sorts of weird notions. But we have people saying that nest is sacred. That's funny when the preachers run into lots. It's sacred. Each molecule is sacred. People get the idea that they're all dead bodies of one kind or another. They're things that have dragged in everything on themselves and are therefore fixed. They get the idea that it's all poison. They get the idea that certain things accidentally combining with other things might cause reactions so horrible that nobody could confront them, so you better not combine anything with anything. Let's kind of keep it all separate. And they obsessively keep things separate, and they do that long enough, they collapse. It's quite amusing because they're running basically on a law of reaction. In other words, there are tremendous numbers of considerations by which one must not look at things as they are. And part of having this is not looking at things as they are. But it's very easy to unbalance this. Things as they are, well, when you look at things exactly as they are, you will get nothing. I give you the experiment's perfect duplication as covered in Creation and Human Ability. A perfect duplicate. It's a duplication of something with itself in its own space by its own postulates. And you get this. You get this mechanism, perfect duplication, you get nothing. So there's this little alteration necessary. Now, this whole idea of time is simply an alteration, a parade of alterisnesses. And you get enough alterisnesses running automatically enough, and you have everybody going along in the same time span, which is quite amusing. What's amusing about it is that it is impossible to put this on total automatic. Tying is so difficult to do that it still requires a considerable amount of contribution from everybody participating in it. Now, what you find fault with, in pretty clear, is that he's alter-ising, changing, shifting, altering, more than he needs to. Now, I'll give you some idea of how this is produced. You take things away from a person so frequently and violently, consistently, and so irreparably, that he becomes very anxious about having this. Then he will cut in more alter-isness and more alteration and more change of consideration about having this in order to keep it from being as is. In other words, by making somebody anxious about the solidity or something other things, he goes back on this old mechanism of alter it to make it persist. And the more you take away from him, the more he will alter things. You understand that? There is coordination then between control and happiness, and it is simply that an individual's anxiety about happiness, the existence of things, causes the individual to obsessively change those things more and more and more and more. So we get, coincidentally, this thing occurring. The more people lose, the more they change what they have. And that is a quite an interesting rule. The more they lose, the more they change what they have. Now let's take some fellow, I'll give you an example of this, let's take some fellow, I ain't got to wrap your wits around this thing, this is one of those things. This has been understood, I have never articulated it before, or lined these three factors up where they belong, given them their proper importance. We have known about isness and not-isness and all-isness for quite some time, but we never really got in there slugged on a practical auditing level. And now we are. This is really very, very practical. This is really down to earth, you might say, not ending any double on ponder. All right. Now, here we get what happens to people when they become aberrated. They depart too far from the isness of things as they are. See, they go too far from it. So far that nothing that they have is real and they don't have it. In other words, they can alter things so obsessively that they cease to have them at all because they can't have the thing that is right there in front of them. They alter a chair into a window quick and scat. You understand? They will go way over the line. Why? Because all the isness is that which preserves or continues nest. A little of it goes a long way. Now, the favorite, here's an altered isness of ownership, which is an altered isness of creativeness, same thing. We mock up a wall and say, isn't that a pretty wall, Joe, mocked up? As a matter of fact, that's quite enough to keep the wall there, because our basic agreement on it is that when the altar is something, it persists. Joe mocks up a wall and you say, isn't that a beautiful wall I mocked up? And then you get persistence. It's very simple. Continuance by various considerations made by Thetans depends then upon all the business. So when a person becomes anxious about continuance, like Tom Sawyer's cat, he administers just a little bit more medicine, just a little bit more painkiller. All he needs is another dose of this alterisness. Oh my, now it doesn't become one alteration of ownership. The ownership sails out into some incredible deity. It was, when the wall was mocked up by Mog or something of the sort. Mog, the great god Mog, and Mog mocked up all the walls of the world. He is the god of walls. And if you touch a wall, now we'll just get a little bit more drastic about it. If you touch a wall, you insult Mog. You get the idea. And the life hereafter, we have to mock up so that Mom can punish you after you back out of your dead head. That's another altar, isn't it, you see? Now let's just forget the deity of laws, and let's just make one deity for everything and make him so unattainable that nobody can ever do anything about him. We get this as all there is, all there is, all there is, just a little bit further out. Now, we find out that doesn't work too well, so we add on to it the fact that all mess was originally poison, and only by looking at it in a certain way, with a certain squint in one eye, will it not bite you. See, and we must come back and start all raising all over again. Let's get rid of all these ideas about ownership and bury them and put them totally on automatic. Who created it? Let's get that all fouled up completely, moved clear across and out of the way, and start substituting new things. Now let's tell some real good lies about this stuff and just get going on it and just get it so submerged on all business that nobody will ever get a happy idea and suddenly look at it and have it disappear. So let's say that all molecules are basically poison. And this is proven by the fact that they interact in certain ways. And we could go ahead and prove to beings that they interacted badly, that they exploded and they did bad things to people and so on. Let's grow a lot of vines and name them poison ivy and show people they shouldn't touch leaves by making these poison ivy then quite like other leaves, like plain ivy. Well, let's always plant poison ivy with plain ivy, and that'll keep the dogs and the little boys off of the stuff. You get the idea. Let's just mess this up something fierce. Let's just move it over one way or the other. And now let's invent a whole bunch of property laws, so that at any time anybody touches anything that isn't his, why, he has some tremendous corporeal punishment. His mess gets taken away from him. And we look at law, and we find that all law is based on headiness. But very little bit, and a very, very little bit of law is based on communication. But law exerts itself as control. Quite amusing. Now you could actually postulate a number of ethics and morals and rightness of conduct and this sort of thing, but you're into the field of control. And it shows you how far south law is gone, because almost totally, disobedience of the law is about the only crime there is with regard to law. We don't any longer have law being adjudicated on simply an ethical level. It was an ethical thing to do. There is one court, I think, left in New Jersey with an old Dianeticist running it. There's a court left in England called the Court of Chancery, where things are adjudicated to a marked degree upon the ethics of the situation rather than the law. The rights are weighed rather than the written law. But the U.S. Supreme Court has gone an entirely different direction, and they are now adjudicating things on scientific bases. Whether something is scientific or not is whether or not it is lawful or unlawful. This is quite amusing. I give you Senator Eastland's speech in the U.S. Senate concerning the anti-segregation decision. Quite amazing. Eastland points out, and several federal justices through the country up to this time have pointed out, that this is the first time that science, and it's very funny to call psychology a science, because it's not. It's not based on known laws or isolated principles at all. It's just a bunch of observations canned up and put in the book. And the United States Supreme Court took some textbooks on psychology, which were written by people who had already been indicted before the House, I think, on American Activities Committee for Communist Activities, and which books, however, said that the Negro was as well off mentally as the white man, which may or may not be true, but they had no right to use this, you see. And therefore, and thereby, anti-segregation was decided upon. And there have been several motions introduced so far into committees in the House and the Senate to this time to impeach the entirety of the Supreme Court except for the three justices who dissented, because they departed from disobeying the law and went over into scientific adjudication. In other words, the law has gotten so low it's not trying to enforce what some people have dreamed up and are calling scientific postulates. You get that? You get how far afield this is going now. It goes from ethics, where it started, ethics and mores, down to havingness and obey the law, and then down to just obey the law, and now down to are people obeying certain scientific principles, and if they are not, they are going to be punished by the United States Supreme Court. No scientific principles, this is everybody is equal, and I don't ever see that this has ever been proven. They're undoubtedly Negroes smarter than I am, they're undoubtedly white men that are smarter than Negroes. Any series of tests would demonstrate the fallacy of these quote scientific laws, but men are being put in jail and fined today for disobeying these decisions of the United States Supreme Court based upon a fallacious law. And I'm only quoting Senator Eastland and others as they have spoken on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Now, they get in all business, you see, they're really departing down the line. And the more people get anxious about having this, the further they depart down this line. You could draw up the scale if you want to. It wouldn't do you any particular good as a Scientologist. An understanding of it shouldn't be yours. At first, one thing makes postulate, and then he enforces it or gets it agreed with one way or the other, and it becomes a consideration. And then this consideration floats along as a good game until somebody has this thing entering into the realm of havingness or the game or something, and he decides that this is absolutely necessary, so he enforces this consideration and makes it against the law to disobey this consideration, and eventually we wind up with the elemental charge member needs laws, elementary physics, elementary chemistry, and that is merely the sequence. It's interesting that this sequence comes apart under auditing in a preclip. That's the only thing I'm telling you. You see that? Now, don't look dazed over this, because this is too easy. You've known this for a long time, that all things proceed from postulates. And I just happen to be telling you the involved way by which they do so. And the only thing I'm describing to you here is how alter isness plays its role in havingness. We get a persistence of havingness by alter isness. And we do that by enforcing the considerations back of it. And we just keep enforcing considerations, then we alter some more considerations, we get it, we go on and on and on, down the line. Next thing you know, we've gone so far that the altered thing, or the altering thing, let us say we altered, and then we got an altered thing, which wasn't the thing at all, but a substitute, and that substitute becomes more real than the object. People look at a chair and see a table. People look at a light and see a chandelier. People look at a door and see a window. You got the idea. See, the substitute thing is the thing, and this is delusion. That is all delusion is. Is things have been altered to such a degree that nothing any longer resembles anything that was basically intended to be. Now, we intend a board to be a table, and this would be good enough to make it a chair. You see that? Just the fact that we said it was a table would make it a chair. All right, we say we are going to do an honest thing, and with many people, this then is an admission that we're going to do something dishonest. Do you understand that? It's just beginning. I mean, it's that fast. They don't even do it consciously. We simply say we're making an honest effort to do something. And at once, to many people who are completely submerged on the subject of havingness, we get, they are dishonest crooks. Immediate result. You see that? Now, somebody can get into a basis, and you'll notice here I didn't mention the word either psychiatry or psychology. I think I was being very good. I didn't mention either of those words in this particular paragraph. And They get to a point where their statement that they're going to do good makes them immediately destroy anything they touch. In other words, we now get from the communication factor, where the fact that one person says to another person, I'm going to do good, and the other person at once says, he means evil. So we get from there, we get a closure down to a point where just the statement or the thought that one is going to do good makes him do evil. Do you understand that? He just gets the 1-2 right in himself, not on a communication basis, but he gets it on a time span of a repeated intention. In other words, the oration becomes at once accomplished on the single statement of intention. And no matter what intention he states, he'll get another intention, all right? This fellow's trying to run a body. He said, I'm going down to the corner, so he walks upstairs. You see that? We get an alteration. We don't get it of one person by another, by which consideration all other people besides myself mean evil. Most people today in this world are to some degree on that kick. The fellows over there are bad. This is almost automatic today as a postulate. His intentions, just because he's somebody else, are not as good as my intentions. It's quite interesting. That's how you breed wars, by the way. You'll find everybody in the universe believes that he himself has good intentions and that other people have bad intentions. And if everybody believed this, then you would have a mythical second party in all cases. Which second party did not exist at all, so he could never be analyzed or understood, so we would have evil afloat in the world. Do you see how that would be a conflict? I mean, we mocked up a second party who doesn't exist. You read newspapers today, you are made to believe that the rest of the world is pretty doggone rotten. That's everybody believing that everybody else is rotten. All right, now that's fine, but when you get a closure, when the communication ceases out of this, you get a complete closure, a terminal. Then, the person who reports on the other person is reporting on himself, and he says he is evil. Now we have everybody being evil. See, it's not very much of a jump from A saying that B is evil to a closure of terminals whereby A wishes he were good but knows he's bad to A is bad. You got the notion there. It's a rather pathetic picture, by the way. It's a rather pathetic picture that everybody basically is good, you see. And that doesn't matter to whom that applies. He basically is actually well-intentioned or ethically aligned. But he gets the idea that other people aren't, and therefore, to stay in agreement and live a life, he has to be careful, so forth. Friends, I've never succeeded in doing business by contract. I have never succeeded in doing business by contract. I've only succeeded in doing business, or I have had to touch the stuff. It's kind of a drug, you know. You get drunk on it very easily, business. And I've known guys who do it all the time and never do anything else. And they get to a point where they'll eventually do it totally by contract. Well, I've never had any successful business by contract. The only successful business I've ever engaged in as a writer or anything else or in expeditions has been by trust. I assume the other guy's all right and he means well and he'll do all right. As long as I continue to assume that and I never do anything else, I never have any trouble with it. But somebody has to come along and explain to me how he's bad and give me some proof to this effect and make my communication break down a little bit in order to have the other party go bad. But no contract I have ever signed has ever guaranteed the performance by itself. You understand that? It's much more important with whom you do business than how you do business. This is much more important. Similarly, in life, you can control any sphere where you recognize the first postulate and you're tough enough to hang on to the first postulate, no matter how much the automatic second postulate turns on of the all reasons. Do you understand that? If you're tough enough to maintain the first postulate and to take any consequences to your mess to maintaining this first postulate, you will always win because it is the senior dominating, monitoring postulate. The other fellow is a good guy. And he ran himself out trying to prove otherwise sometimes. Some people did in Dianetics. It was quite amazing. There's two or three fellows that just knocked themselves out trying to prove that they were evil. Because what? Because they never really succeeded in doing anything that had any great long-span effectiveness. You see that. The first postulate, life is life, livingness is livingness, is more powerful than death. See, the cycle of action is more powerful at the beginning than at the end. If you maintain livingness, and you maintain life, and you go on living, and you go on acting, and you go on doing, and you go on maintaining your own ability to grant beingness, and go on granting beingness, and granting livingness, and so forth, come hell or high water, you're unassailable. It's only when you break down and go in for this alteration of the basic fact into a bunch of more consecutive facts that you lose your grip on the communication line and go into havingness. And there's how a person arrives into havingness. He falls for this death postulate, or a succumb postulate, as an alteration of the life postulate in order to make life persist. But here's something very peculiar. It requires no effort on his part to make life persist, because life is survival. It's very funny. Would you work to make a hungry child hungry? In such a wise, why work to make a total survival being survive, you see? Well, the only way you'd have to, you'd be able to work at this would be to fall for the second postulate and believe he's dying. Now, what does a Scientologist who calls, say, Satan back to a body and makes him reanimated do? What does he do? He actually won't fall for the fact of death. The guy's lying there, stretched out, he's pale, cold, there's no pulse, no heartbeat, you see, no breath on the mirror. And he says, go back and take hold of his body. And the fellow says, oh, somebody's on to me, and he comes back and lifts an eye and says, what I want. It's quite interesting. But what has he done, basically? He has simply not fallen for any consideration for the idea of death, which is a falsity and an alteration, don't you see? You see, that is a dreamed-up fact. Life isn't dreamed up. Anything from there on is. And you fall for the dreamed-up fact, and then you lose your ability to handle and monitor life, and you go into havingness as the thing. So in order to go into havingness, you have to go into death. And your first consideration after you start fooling around with havingness is that something can die. Things can disappear. Well, if you mock up something and say it's not going to disappear, that should be enough. That should be plenty. So there shouldn't be anything else connected with that. Now, where we have life, somebody has said, we have hope. No, I'm afraid we have more than hope. We have life. Now, how would we get into any kind of a situation whereby there was no life? Well, we have to assume it. Now, we can say, there's a mock-up, it will persist, and that should be that. But instead of that, we use a via. We say, my postulate isn't good enough to make this mock-up persist. I've got to enter into some kind of a nonsensical, hurdy-gurdy scheme of things by which I say that this postulate was not made by myself, it was made by God. And only that way can it persist, because things which are altered persist. We have to make this other set of postulates, things which are altered persist, which is easier for other people to follow, we feel.
Well, when we pick up something that's easier for other people to follow, even who once lost any faith in anybody else, to respect the fact that you mocked up something, and therefore you said it persists, and we've already said they aren't ethical, they aren't alive, and so we went into some other system, and we're in the suit. And there's where all your alterations and alterations occur in headings. Now, but we notice that if happiness is made to persist by change, then perforce control is lower on the scale of operational techniques by the auditor than happiness. But remember that happiness is all the way down. Remember that communication is all the way down, too. But at this stage of the game, only control is observably all the way down. You understand, all three of these things go all the way south. But the tab that is left open for you to audit at first entrance into the case is control. The exercise of control, of course, takes away the automaticity of change. And so, to a marked degree, wipes out alteration. And so makes happiness possible. It's as simple as that. Control is start, change, and step. Alteration is change. So we run hand contact mimicry with somebody, and we are controlling his hands. Well, don't be surprised if his hands become more real to him. What do we mean by more real? And we mean simply that he is not so obsessively altering hands that he cannot have hands. He now can have hands. You see that? By control, we knocked out some obsessive alteration. And having knocked it out, we then increase his ability to have. Now, it's quite remarkable. We just conducted a little test for your benefit. Oh, the HTC just did this one thing. We took Look at Me, Who Am I? And ran it for a couple of hours, and it didn't flatten. And obviously, on that person, it was producing change, but on that person, it didn't even evidently have a show of flattening within a week. So I asked the auditor to get off of that now, and let's get on to SCS. And then we turn to Look at Me, Who Am I? You got it. In other words, the object, the auditor, who would seem an object. By the way, as people get better, other people become objects to them. Quite interesting. I don't know what another person is to a nuclear physicist, but any sane person under auditing, coming upscale, gets that as one of his first considerations. He says, well, now I've been paying token grace to the idea that other people were alive and all of this. And it's sort of an educational level. People become objects to it. They become more solid, more real. And after SCS was run on this preclear, the auditor caught the preclear, looking at him very fixedly, examining him in a rather interested way. Got the idea. In other words, Look at Me, Who Am I? Flattened by running SCS. Got that? In other words, we found an auditor by running SCS. But remember, that SCS was run with a heavy control factor by agreement with the auditor, much heavier than this auditor's ever run anybody before. Crunch! You understand? On terrific control. Good ERC, tremendous control. That preclear could not bat an eyelash without permission from the auditor. You understand? That preclear was not permitted to think, act, spit, do anything except follow the auditing command at the instant the auditing command was given. Auditor lugging the preclear into the starts, you see. When I tell you to start your body, when you start your body, the auditor right there with an arm around the preclear, starting the preclear off. No other automaticity involved but the auditor. Now, it's an odd thing that on that SCS, no power of choice was allowed to preclear. Why? Because we looked at the preclear's profile and we said, power of choice? And we're sure the bank has terrific power of choice. All of it alterations. The power of choice was resident in the reactive mind of the preclear as a bunch of engrams combining with a bunch of engrams. But there was no power of choice in the part of the preclear. Some hours of this in the preclear had monitored. Heavy control, you understand? Very heavy control. But very pleasant ARC. You don't run heavy control at 1.5. Heavy control isn't any good at 1.5 because 1.5 implies a doubt that you can do it. And where you have good control, you don't have any doubts. Do you see that clearly? So the control becomes doubly vicious by running it in a high-toned way. It becomes violently horrible. You say to a person offhandedly, pleasantly, nicely, smooth, cultured voice, you say. Now, when I tell you to start the body, I want you to start the body in that direction. All right, start the body. Very clear. This way, the auditor's arm, the back of the preclear, and the auditor starts the body just as nice as you please. This becomes horrible. Think of control has broken down the moment the auditor would say, I told you to start that body. When I said start that body, I didn't start that body. Oh, no, that isn't an impressive level of control. That isn't impressive at all. You know what impresses people about control is effortless control. That's what impresses them about control. But when you substitute your body's arm in a friendly way, you actually are not substituting a great deal of effort. They'll go along with it to the degree that your hand is friendly. Quite amazing. I ran a rapids once in a survey vessel. I was sitting in the navigator's chair with my feet up on the railing, smoking a cigarette. I wasn't looking at the charts or anything else. I wasn't doing anything. I was just sitting there, looking at the scenery, commenting on the trees as they went by at 20 knots. It wasn't a pose on my particular part. I happened to know that that was a very, very safe channel, although it ran very fast. Even if you went over the edge and went into the, tried to go into the bank of the channel, tried to steer yourself aground in this narrow channel, the bank itself had enough backwash to throw you back into the current again. I had seen freight cars on barges go through that at a high run attached to a tug, 4 and 5 barges attached to a tug. And those things were slewing around like a snap the snake whip, you know? And you just can't hit the bank in that, you know? But to sit up there casually, feeling no danger myself because I knew by experience that there was none, and have a totally green crew who had never been near that place before, you see? Boy, was that impressive to them, you know. They brought me hot coffee afterwards, and, you know, fantastic. White water flowed in there for about 2-3 miles. You see, the accepted method of control contains some anxiety in it, don't you see? There should have been some anxiety. You should sound like you're anxious about it all, you know. Sound like there was some chance that you wouldn't get through this one. It gives people a sensation that you yourself personally are pushing something through. And maybe if you're casual enough and positive enough at the same time, maybe you are. Why is it that people have accidents when they're emotionally upset? is because the control factor's dropped. But you say these people are at a high 1.5.
Well, you control things.
Well, may I think? Well, they obviously aren't, because they have accidents. So it isn't necessary for you to be nasty to control people. Just be positive. And this goes all the way south, right on down to a dead man. Control must assume there is something alive there when you're controlling people. Do you understand that? Because control, on your part, assumes the isness which is being controlled. Unless you can assume what is being controlled, you won't control it. So when you're controlling a human being, you must assume the isness that this person is alive, it is trying, and can do it. And when you assume all those things, they can. That's the necromancy of it all. The dead body is assumed to be alive, and so it is. Now, because there is something there that is alive, you are not re-enlivening or rejuvenating anything, but this is the way it looks to people who don't know. So what else does it take? What else does good control take? It takes a splendid knowledge of all facets of the isness being controlled. When you control a large vessel, it actually doesn't so much necessitate the tremendous mechanical gimmicks around as it necessitates the idea of your awareness that there is a mass there which will obey your various proddings and commands, you see. Just that. Now we add a rather vast knowledge of its mechanical intricacies too, never forgetting at once, never forgetting that it is just a mass, and the control is just spark change and stop. Otherwise, don't get immersed in all the significances of the gimmicks. Gimmicks are just gimmicks. They do not throw aside the basic fact at all that they only spark change and stop things. And we never fail to control an object. We never fail to control a person. And we can't fail to control anything. And when we can control everything, then we're not worried about controlling everything, because it's not necessary, because by that time we can have some things. And a person only gets worried about controlling things when he can't have things. A person only gets worried about communication when he no longer can receive or give control. Then he's real worried about communication. He's somewhat upset about having this, but he's terribly worried about communication. In other words, the amount of worry is progressively worse as we go from the curative levels down. So the person's first relieved with communication, and then the further down scale he goes, the more and more worried he gets about the cure, until the cure becomes the evil itself. So that extends from communication, which is all the way at the top, right on down through addingness and control, too. And a person who can't be controlled has just got the doggondest ideas about communication. If somebody says bear to him, a bear is liable to appear and bite him. I mean, he's in a bad way. Communication is just too terrible to contemplate. It's all mixed up with addingness, becomes addingness, unbecomes addingness, does all sorts of things. You could even, for your own amusement, draw the scale of what communication does as a person proceeds down scale. Now we take addingness from the moment a person can have something, and we go on down scale from there, happiness gets worse and worse, but we're entering into control. And the way he expresses his concern or worry over happiness is a very simple way. He expresses it with anxiety about control. His control factor gets worse and worse until the control scale itself goes into apathy, and everything controls him, but nothing controls him because he can't Well, a fellow who can't control anything and nothing can control is a fellow who will have to go a long way north before he can have. And the entrance to it is control. If a psychiatrist was not himself so thoroughly involved with control, he would really have no trouble with insane people, and he would never have to employ such things as electric shock and other nonsense, which he knows full well makes him away well. If he was capable himself of the level of control of a Scientologist, just running a psycho through infection every day or so would straighten the person out. It would be so easy to do. How are you this morning, Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones is gnawing the rug, and just his heels are visible from under the bed, and squish all over the floor, and so forth. How are you this morning, Mr. Jones? That's fine. Now, would you stand up here and let me look at your face, Mr. Jones? Dig him out, bend him up, and Mr. Jones' face, and say, well, thank you, Mr. Jones, and let him go. Come back the next day and do the same thing. After a while, you'd only have to say to Mr. Jones, well, now let's stand up here and take a look at your face. Mr. Jones would promptly. He would obey an order. And at that moment, he could at least have the psychiatrist. Got the idea? Well, now there is the root out in insane people. You can run communication on them by running mimicry. You can run happiness on them by giving them things. And these have a certain level of workability. But there is nothing that goes as far south as control. But the way we have to do control, besides so unswerving and so positive that it admits of no argument whatsoever, and you will always stay in high tone control of things. Now, if you only learned how to control people, you would never have any trouble with children or workers or anything else, because most of these people are below the level of happiness. And being below the level of happiness, they are, by older techniques, rather unauditable. But they're certainly not unauditable by control. But unfortunately for you, control is something you have to buck up to, something you have to practice, something you have to understand. To get your willingness to do that completely by 76,000 million trillion jillion years of being convinced that you shouldn't. And it's a very easy thing to do, actually. Now, there's where these things fit, and there's where CCH fits in auditing, and there's where it goes. All of this flashes back simply to business. Things are what they are. They aren't anything else. You can just get a pre-clerk and see that directly. You will bypass all of it. But unfortunately, I'm afraid you're never going to do that. But if you get a miracle cure sometime that you just can't quite understand how the man's leg unwithered in front of your eyes, boom, in some way you've got communication to intertwine with happiness, so as to admit of the isness of a leg. And the second that he admitted of the isness of a leg to that degree, his leg got well. Now there's the route to miracle cures. You don't have to go in that fashion. All you have to do is get him to control his leg, and the same thing will happen, if at a little longer level, but with greater positiveness for you as an auditor. Thank you.